America's students were widely criticized abroad not very long ago for being uninvolved in the big issues of the day. Demonstrating collegians seemed then a phenomenon reserved for Latin America, Japan, or Europe. Well, needless to say, all that seems like very ancient history today as the wave of college unrest and protest and demonstration sweeps the country, with this weekend culminating in coordinated anti-war, pro-civil rights activities on dozens of campuses, as you've heard. Tonight, in the middle of these events, as he has been for the past several years and fresh from NYU this afternoon, is Dick Gregory, whose highly successful career as a comedian has been largely shelved in favor of almost continuous campus lecturing on the subject of the American racial crisis. Mr. Gregory is also the author of several books, the latest of which is called The Shadow That Scares Me. Dick, we'll get to the campus in a moment, but we heard a moment ago that Mr. Humphrey is about to announce his candidacy for president, and Mr. Rockefeller may throw his hat in the ring. You've been a candidate for quite a while. What's your reaction to the thickening political race in this country?
Well, I think it's to be expected. I think that America have to make sure that we do not go to the polls and vote again for the lesser of the two evils, as we've been doing, because it might be the last election we have in this country, and I think it's very vital, and it's going to be some very key issues. We need a statesman to guide this country out of the dark path that she's following in now, not a politician. And if we can have the amount of dignity that we need this coming election, America will be in good shape. This is why the kids are complaining. This is why the attitude. Politicians cannot solve problems in times of crisis. You need statesmen. In times of crisis, statesmen flex their muscles and politicians flex their minds. And I think it's going to be very critical this coming election, this coming year.
Well, without dwelling too long on this one subject, though, among those running, do you see statesmen in the race? Do you see anyone that Dick Gregory is a candidate? You don't expect
to
win?
No. It's hard to say. You wouldn't expect to win, but I never expected to turn on a news television show and see a tank passing the White House, neither, you know, as we did a couple of weeks ago. So I say in times of chaos, it's very hard to say what will happen. I'm running as a statesman and hope that this third voice will wake up a lot of people and just don't have this thing where the Democrats and Republicans keep saying the same thing. I would like, if a statesman entered the race, I would gladly get out. Because
so who would you pull out of your hat for that?
Oh, again, I think this is a crisis we have in this country, that this country is so prone for everybody to know who Matt Dillon is and Jesse James and Frank James and Al Capone, that our intellects and our statesmen go completely unnoticed and untouched. I think this is very, very frightening. I think we have millions of statesmen in this country, but who knows of them? And this is what I'm saying. And you see, the word politics means the ability to compromise. And we just happen to be so far into problems that we can't solve them through compromising. We have to solve the problems now.
Yes. Now, you're on the campuses, and today at NYU, you were speaking about the war as well as the race problem. But these young people that you talk to, are they getting the message as you deliver it, or are you shocking them? Is this a shock effect?
I don't really go to give them a message. I go to let them hear the truth. And it's almost like if someone stick you up and put a shotgun in your face and the officer said, well, what'd he look like? You say, I don't know. He said, well, if you saw him again, would you recognize him? You say, yes. This is the effect I intend to have on campuses all over the country, to go and give them the truth and explain to them that it's their job to solve these problems. And it's horrible that I, 36 years old, have to go and tell the youth of this country that you have to solve the problems. But, you know, we are so corrupt in this country. You know, the social problems that exist in America today, if they existed in any other country on the face of this earth, we could solve it. And this is scary. And why can't we solve it here? Because we keep passing the buck and we keep passing the buck, and it has fallen right into these young kids' lap. And I would say, if these problems are not solved in the next 3 years, we won't have a country.
Yeah, well, of course, we've always heard that, you know, America can do no wrong as we grew up. This was something that everybody used as a cliche, and perhaps the things that are wrong that people didn't want to see because they didn't think they existed. Do you think this is part of it?
Well, I think it's more people, the young kids are being more honest now, and it's more stuff out in the street now, and it's not as much as going to come out in the street. You know, everybody's looking at the black problem right now, but we got a red brother up on that reservation, and we going all over the world. We three 13,000 miles away from America trying to guarantee the Vietnamese rights and freedoms that our own red brother don't have. He's a cat we stole the country from. Now, what do he have to do? He got to get a pistol and start shooting. He got to start burning towns down before he wakes us up. You know, I was kind of hoping that the black problem, that once it was aired out, that it would be aired out in a way where everybody would see all of the other problems. I hope it's not each group got to come out now and take their turn.
It's been kind of said about the Vietnam problem that those who look at it and look at the problem it's created say, well, the healthy part of the Vietnam problem is that in itself it also exposes the whole Asian question to the American.
Well, I don't think only that. I think the Vietnam problem have exposed America to America. I think when we look at the news and when you show your news clips of your what we call refugee camps in South Vietnam with the barbed wire around it, and if you look at one of those old news films of history being relived again, you look at the Nazi concentration camps, they're both the same, but yet and still we have made Americans believe that 35,000 people showed up at the refugee camp today. And Hitler is sick and as insane as he was, he never pretended to the world that he was running rest homes for a bunch of lazy, shiftless, no-count Jews that didn't like paying rent and wasn't hooked on LSD but was hooked on sniffing gas, and he supplied that to them. The whole world knew what Hitler was doing. It's shameful. The whole world know what America's doing except us. And I think this Vietnam War have, you know, opened the eyes to a lot of people, black and white, particularly black folks. I mean, America tells me that I might have to go to war, to Vietnam, to guarantee a foreigner instant freedom, while my six black kids in Chicago is told to get theirs on the installment plan. And this type of eye-openers, is, I think we made progress as far as the mind, as far as white and black folks becoming aware through the war in Vietnam, but I would rather not make progress if it had to be through those type of inhumane conditions.
Of course, when you mention Hitler, I'm sure that many of the students and those you talk to are shocked and reject the whole idea of making this kind of comparison with this kind of conscious brutality that occurred in Germany and what is said to be an unconscious result of war in Vietnam. Isn't this an unfair comparison?
Well, I imagine if you'd have told them Nazis that, they probably thought it was unfair too. I mean, even up to now, you know, a lot of them still harbor and hide some of the criminals that was involved. I think this is what's wrong with the country today, beautifully, is the kids are beginning to see this. And us older Americans are still, you know, we got a law in this country now that says you can't burn American flag. The interesting thing about that law, had you picked up a paper 4 years ago and read where four students at the University of Moscow were sentenced for burning the Russian flag, we would have said, that's communism for you. And now we got the same law. Nobody said anything about it because, you know, in America we say it can't happen like this. And I think the number one problem, that if these young kids can make America as frightened of injustices as she is of communism, we would solve all the problems, and this would be the number one most groovy country on the face of the earth. But I think anybody that's informed and deals with the social element of society and can't see the Nazi fascist elements that's coming up in this country, I think we're all in trouble.
You talk a lot about the term racist. You talk about white racists and black racists. How do you interpret the meaning of this term?
Well, one, I think when I judge you according to you as a white man, that's racist judging, when I can do something for you or against you because of your color or your nationality, you're getting into a racist thing. And I think the whole world couldn't survive without prejudice. You see, prejudice is just to prejudge, which we have a right to prejudge. You have a right to see me drinking five glasses of water and assume I'm thirsty. That's prejudging. You do not have a right to see me drinking five glasses of water and, because I'm black, assume that I'm thirsty. Or likewise with you, to see you walking down the street real fast and just because you white with a suit on, assume you rich just because you're white. That's racist thinking. And this is the problem that we are confronted with in America today, is this racist thinking. We fail to just let normal reasoning that you would normally use all over the world with a mind that's born to filter out reasoning one way or the other. We get into, as we use the term in America, this racist bag, you know. Did this happen to me because I'm black? Did he act this way to me because I'm black? Is this, for instance, I say I'm a racist because, one, if I had to lose my black wife in the morning to another man and I had a choice of losing her to a white cat or a black cat, I'd pick a black cat under the false pretenses that I wouldn't want my black friends to laugh at me about losing my wife to a white boy. I don't care what you hide it under. This is racism. You know, I'm just honest enough to have found mine. And I think this is what the country have to work, not to get rid of, but to implement the United States Constitution so your racism or my racism won't affect nobody but us. And then we gotta, see, the Constitution gives you freedom of speech, which means a man have a right to call me a nigger. That's freedom of speech, just don't spit on me. Freedom of expression means a man have a right to dislike me because I'm black. That's freedom of expression, but don't burn no crosses on the front lawn and don't set up no barriers and tell me I can't move any way I wanna move. And so under the United States Constitution, it's probably the only country a man has a right to be a racist. And the laws are so set up to where his racism is not supposed to affect me and my racism is not supposed to affect him. And this is why we're pushing to get the constitutional implemented to its fullest.
Well, what about the whole question of violence and nonviolence, all these terms that are used about how one achieves the desired result of eradicating all of the evils in society?
Well, I think in America, I think nonviolence is the most beautiful philosophy in the world, but in America, violence and nonviolence takes on a racist philosophy because everybody tells black folks in America to be nonviolent, and America goes all over the world dropping bombs and napalm on people, and she's not nonviolent. And so we can't sit and wonder how a white system that owns all the napalm, all the tanks, all the machine guns. You never heard of a black man doing no underground nuclear testing? We ain't never blew up nothing in Nevada. Well, this white man in this system here owns all the hydrogen bombs, all the missiles, and he look at us that owns nothing and say, you be nonviolent. And we said, man, you go to hell, man, because you're playing games with us. It's just totally impossible. And that if he sets the example, then I got to set the example, too. If he says, you know, that we're having a... Now, Matt Dillon comes in my home once a week and teaches me it's a virtue to shoot straight if you write. The United States Constitution gives you a right to bear arms. So this is not a nonviolent country. The Declaration of Independence, which says we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, that when these rights are destroyed over long periods of time, it is your duty to destroy or abolish that government. I think first thing we should do is get rid of the Declaration of Independence, which pridefully tell you what you are supposed to do after long periods of injustices. I got a white history book in my neighborhood that says, give me liberty or give me death. Who said that? Rap Brown? No, man, Patrick Henry said that. So we saying that if this country is really sincere and about nonviolence and stuff, that why do you send me all of this violent literature? Tell me George Washington and that group of farmers he had, you know, like whooped the British, tore up the colonies over what? Over tea. Over tea tax. This nation it has a very violent record until it comes to me. Now, what we're saying, if Americans sincerely appreciates nonviolence, then why don't you go and give that Indian all his constitutional rights? Because you cannot be any more nonviolent than this Indian have been in the last 50 to 75 years.
We're going to go through some violence then, you see. I mean, more violence as we've
think
been going
we're gonna,
through.
I
racial
think we're
violence
gonna,
as it's
I think
been called,
we're
or rioting
through,
or whatever the...
Yeah, I think it's pitiful that until you seem to put the gun on this country and make her peep up through the muzzle, she don't seem to want to understand. If the Indians came out in Nevada or Arizona Monday and got up on the viaduct and started shooting at white folks going to work and yelling, red power and whitey go home, we'd be all upset and the cameras would be up there and you'd look at Meet the Press and they'd be interviewing some Uncle Tom Indian talking about we like it on the reservation. But we would find out one thing through all of this exposure, through that act of violence, is that the number one suicide rate among young folks on the face of this earth happens up on our Indian reservation. The highest form of tuberculosis among any minority group on the face of this earth happens up on our Indian reservation. Now, it's sad that while this man is, quote, behaving himself the way we say we like what people do, that we won't go up and expose this, that we won't go and reach and extend him a hand of brotherhood. And I think this is frightening.
Dick Gregory, some of the other civil rights leaders, they're called. I don't know whether you consider yourself a civil rights leader or not, but people like Whitney Young have said, well, we need Dick Gregory more as a comedian than as a spokesman for the Negro Revolution or for the rights of minorities. Well, what do you say to this?
Well, I think a man got just as much right to want to see me in show business as anyone else. But
I think he said there's only one Dick Gregory and there are lots of us.
Yeah, but two, we got to go back and realize that we didn't laugh Hitler out of existence and we'll probably find a cure for cancer and it won't be through humor. I got six black kids, and in America, black folks die six years younger than white folks. So I got 36 deaf years at my house, that I cannot wipe that out by being up on that stage, being a comedian, only out here in the street where the action is, and this is where I intend to stay.
And yet your particular style of turning the stories that you've told, the irony that you bring into your humor has been so effective over the years, and certainly years ago when you were the first out there in the field doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it was effective, but it never solved no problems. I mean, we never got one civil rights bill because Dick Gregory was funny. And I think if all black folks put down their bricks and start telling jokes, you know, if humor was that powerful, then we should be sending comedians to Vietnam instead of tanks.
No, we sent Bob Hope.
Yeah, but he was to entertain the troops. If that's the case, then I shouldn't be entertaining them with black folks.
You're looking a little better than you did. You've given up your fast for the moment, haven't you? But you're still not smoking.
No, I've given up the still water. I'm still on my fast. I'm drinking fruit juices now until Election Day, November the 5th.
This is your third fast, then, really.
This is my third fast, right.
Yes, and what do you hope to prove with this?
Well, I hope to shock the conscience of America and say that you know, we might not have but one more election if we don't vote right, and to make the politicians on a local level and on a national level. You see, it was very interesting, if I may say this real quickly, that the Colonel report said that the problem in the country was white racism. Well, it's true, and as honest as the Colonel report is, I feel that they put the blame on the wrong people. White folks do not raise their hand and swear to uphold the United States Constitution. Politicians do. And the 50 governors have raised their hand and swear to uphold the United States Constitution. The senators and the Congress, if they lived up to their oath of office, it wouldn't be no problem. And so I think the problem, 99% of this problem, is on the politicians. And this fast is to focus as many people that believe in what I'm doing, as many people that believe that a man that would go on nothing but fruit juices all the way to November might have something. And it's to make them focus on the politicians and make them show statesmanship ability instead of political muscle.
Let's get back to the students in our final couple of moments. You said you were encouraged by what you saw among the white students and the black students. You really think that progress is being made on this level, that they're beginning to understand what you see as the problem and that they can do something about it? All this unrest on campus, all of the kind of boycotting that's been going on?
This is the sign that shows progress. If I had a brain tumor and you was the brain surgeon, just because you left a scar on my head don't mean you wasn't a brilliant brain surgeon, because you cannot perform brain surgery without leaving a scar. And these demonstrations and all of this you see going on college campuses is the scar that have to happen in order for the operation to take place. Now, there's some doctors one day will probably be brilliant enough to perform the operation without cutting. We haven't reached that stage yet in medicine, nor have we reached that stage in social changes. We would live to see the day that we could. But I think this shows progress, the fact that we bring it up. The fact that the young kids in this country demonstrated against LBJ's policies when all of the older Americans was not exactly for LBJ, but wasn't voicing opinion. And it wasn't Bobby Kennedy or McCarthy that made LBJ quit. It was the young kids that demonstrated through the tear gas and through the mace that made LBJ step down. And I think this is power. And nobody's going to kill those young folks' leader, because they don't have none. They follow truth and justice and right.
Well, Dick Gregory, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
For stopping by on your killing schedule and visiting with us this evening.
My pleasure.